has caused confusion and delay.
You have caused
confusion and delay.
I think you are facing prejudice.
Daisy is just the ultimate thought. Daisy is just the ultimate thought.
Your impatience has caused confusion and delay. This storm has caused confusion and delay. You are causing confusion and delay. You caused confusion and delay.
26 years old and you can't even drive? I can. Are you stupid, eh? Are you a stupid fool? Well, why can't you drive then? You can't even drive. Bit grey today.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another Deepest Lore. I'm here, and we're a little bit late because various things kept me. Yes, I basically lost all of yesterday because AAA was home from school unexpectedly, and I had to rush back to deal with that, basically ended up losing, you know, my entire day's work. So earlier on, I had to make the talking turdy I would have made yesterday, which then pushed this show later. Now, this is not going to be too long because I have an appearance on Apostolic Majesty's channel later on, which I'll share, talking about the British Empire. That's at 9 p.m. So this can't go too long, maybe an hour or something like that. But I did promise somewhere on Twitter, I think it was, that I would do a whole show about the level up mechanic in video games, something near and dear to my heart. I'm going to try to break down what makes a good level up mechanic versus what makes a bad one, and so on, soon. Okay. Now, just before we get going, I'd like to remind people, click like and subscribe, join the channel, pick up a course at the Academic Agency. Which advert shall I play today? Let's have a look. Which one have we got here? Why don't we go for... let's go for this one.
Are you sick of hearing about Marx and Keynes? Do you want to know why neoclassical economics is so flawed? Have you ever wondered how to work out the marginal productivity of a burger bun? Do you want to level up your econ knowledge? Buy it now. £350. Foundations of Economics. Foundations of Economics.
I'm here.
Foundations of Economics. Get it now.
So just before get into this, yeah, level up your econ knowledge. And this is a whole show about leveling up. So, yes, you know, put your XP into Foundations of Economics and you can unlock even greater experience and powers if you take that course. Now, I've got a little presentation I put together here because as well as me talking about the level up mechanic, I thought I'd explain kind of what I'm like as a gamer. I would say I'm pretty idiosyncratic as a gamer. Gaming's very mainstream now, friends. Very mainstream. But when I was growing up, it was not. A lot of kids would play like Nintendo or whatever. But I, from about the age of... I'm trying to think of how old I would have been. Maybe 14, 15, something like that. I was pretty much a PC gamer first and foremost. And I've always been really first and foremost a PC gamer. Although my very formative years, my very young years in the 80s, I was I had a ZX Spectrum, which for American fans was just a system we had here in Britain. It was a bit like a kind of what would you have had? The Atari? You had Ataris in America, right? It was kind of like an Amiga, only shitter, basically. But, the ZX Spectrum had a lot of good games. I grew up playing them. Dizzy the Egg and things like that. I had the original Nintendo. And in the console game, I remained a Nintendo loyalist all the way through. So I've had every single Nintendo system from the NES to the Switch. I've got them all. However, despite that fact, I don't really play them. Like a while back, I bought Switch and a pile of games, and I just haven't played it at all. The only games I really end up playing are PC games. And I thought I'd kind of take you through what my... And in fact, I've said before, my real hobby is not even playing games. It's reading about games, buying games, and then never playing them. For example, on Steam, I have... How many games have I got on Steam? 476 games on Steam. And of which I've played maybe a quarter of them. I mean, that many, many games on Steam have zero play hours, even though I have bought them. And I keep on saying to myself, that's it. There needs to be a line, and you're not allowed to play any other games until you've played all the ones you've bought. But then I see something else that catches my interest and I buy it, and then I don't play it. So, I mean, this is one of those things I've been doing for years. Yes, indeed, I do have the single Wii U sold in the UK. I've got a Wii U, and I've got several games for the Wii U as well, but I didn't really play it. Now, if you want to know about buying games, I do have a few kind of unofficial rules for buying games. Here are my own rules, right? Never buy on release day or during the hype. Now, I've been playing games, PC games, and I've been kind of vaguely paying attention to that scene, like I said, since I was 14. Well, I'm 41 years old, so how many years is that? That's, getting on for 25 years now. I've been playing PC games, if not more. I mean, you do the math, as Americans say. One of the things I've learned is that there's a period in which you see a lot of hype for a game, and increasingly, especially since everybody's online these days, there's a period in which everybody's playing the same game, right? Everybody's playing the same game, and pretty much since 2001 or something like that, I've consciously opted out of that. I opt out of it. I tend to play games long after they're in the hype, or they've already established their reputations, and all, you know, the crowd has moved on to the next shiny thing. So I tend to play games out of sync with where everybody else is. That's one of the things I've done for many, many years. The second thing is, especially as you see these games that were hyped at the time and then nobody talks about them like a year later, and there are other games that stand the test of time. The second thing is I never buy on release date. I never buy on the early release. Increasingly difficult thing to stand by, especially as things stay in early release on Steam for like 5 years and things like that these days. But I never buy on early release, ever. I want the finished product. It's bullshit. I'm not, paying for your dev time or whatever. Fuck all that. Release the game properly. I understand the kind of financial pressures of studios and so on, but I want a proper game. I don't want to grow with the beta and the alpha and all that. So fuck all that. I want a finished product. I'm old school in that way, and I'll never change. I'm too old to change. Okay. Third thing. Never play with others online. I've never played an MMORPG. I've never played World of Warcraft. I've never played any game with other people. Okay? In terms of like an RPG or something like that. Never. The only games I've ever played online, I played a few games of TF2 back in the day. I was roped in. I didn't really like, okay, whatever. I played a few games of what's that battle royale game called? Player Battle Underground, whatever. I played a few games of that, and I played Company of Heroes back in the day a little bit. I used to play as the British and camp out, and there was like a 3-on-3 thing. And I would typically be the British, and like the two American or the two Allied forces would attack, and I would build up the base and like send some bombs and stuff like that. You know, a little bit of that because it was competitive, you know. And Warcraft 3, those are pretty much the only games I've ever played online, and I largely regret the time I spent doing those. Yeah. Trying to think of anything else I've ever played online. There's a card game called Spectromancer I played a little bit. There was another Magic the Gathering game I played a little bit. Usually this is when somebody I've known has roped me in. I've been roped in by other people. What else have I played online? Yeah, the one game I bought that breaks a lot of these rules is Hearthstone. I had Hearthstone on the iPad. In fact, I don't play it anymore, but you know, back when Hearthstone was a thing, I got into that and I reached I was a very annoying player. If anybody's ever played Hearthstone, I was what is known as a freeze mage. Ever played against a freeze mage? I don't know if that meta still exists anymore, because Hearthstone kept on changing all the time, and they changed all the cards, and you know, every once in a while they'd shake things up, and it kind of got irritating after a while. But I played as a freeze mage, which is one of the most annoying control decks to play against. But you know, that was my game essentially. And I remember there was rankings in that game, and at one point I got to like 2 or 3, not like in the world, but there's like a broad category of where you're ranked. And at my peak, I was like a 2 or a 3 in that. I got into that, and I'm trying to remember if I ever actually spent any money on Hearthstone. I maybe spent like 20 quid in all the time I played it, but you could build up a deck just through playing, couldn't you? You'd get rewards for winning games, I seem to remember. That's the only game with like a kind of loot bot mechanism I can remember playing online was Hearthstone. I played. I mean, the whole thing with the freeze mage was you build up your deck, you'd constantly prevent the enemy from attacking until you got the ultimate combo, which was, I can't remember the names of the spells now. It was like Frost, Lance, and that would be instant death for most opponents, you know, because it'd do a huge damage. But you had to wait. The whole game was waiting until that combo came in and just controlling the board, you know, keeping them at bay until the combo was in, and then you'd kill them. Many, many opponents I remember were just rage quit against a freeze mage. Like, I would say half of all my wins was just people rage quitting and, you know, hurling abuse and all the rest of it. So, anyway. Why don't I pirate games? I can't be bothered. I mean, you know, when you've been around long enough, you know, yeah, there was all the old Pirate Bay and all the rest of it. But I actually find there's a convenience in having them all on Steam these days. And, you know, frankly, I haven't got anything to spend money on, like my own personal money, you know, the money I make off this channel. Certain amount of it I have to invest in, you know, other stuff to make the channel better. You know, there's all that sort of stuff. Certain amount of stuff obviously is, you know, paying for stuff for the family, you know, stuff my daughter or my wife needs and so on. But in terms of my own personal money, other than like buying my cigars and games and things, I don't have much to like. I've never had much to spend money. Like, you can get like big purchases. Oh, I need to buy a kitchen. I need to buy a car, you know. But in terms of, I mean, I don't know if anyone else finds this, I've never had stuff to spend money on. So Steam is often a place that ends up kind of, you know, it's like, well, what do I do with this disposable income? All right, I'll buy. I mean, I found that for many years. It's one of the few things that I actually like buy for myself. You know, and especially when you're running a family and you're the kind of the main breadwinner, you know, you end up like for Christmas and birthdays, you know, a pair of socks, tin of shortbread. It's like, because nobody else knows what to get you either, right? So I tend to buy stuff on Steam. And these days, of course, I've got a little friend called Morkar, who actually means that my Steam game purchases are tax deductible, believe it or not. So even my Steam is not genuine. Even that's a business expense these days. So anyway, those are my rules for buying games. I don't know if anyone, like, has anyone got a different, has anyone got like a different, you know, if you've got your own kind of unofficial rules when you buy a game, let me know what it is. Are you someone who buys during the hype? Are you someone who actually gets through? I mean, I used to know people who would always play the current thing, because in gaming, there's always a current thing. I don't know what it is. What are people playing at the moment? Baldur's Gate 3? No, I'm a huge Baldur's Gate fan from back in the day, but I will not play that game as things stand right now. I may check it out in 3 years' time, and I've always been like that. I've never been, on the latest greatest train, always. So yeah, let's carry on then. So here are some of my people wondering what sort of games I play. Most played games on I've had my Steam account since, let's have a look where my Steam account was made. Maybe you can do a thing, can't you? Date added to library. So the oldest game on my Steam account was purchased in November 2008. So I've had my Steam accounts since 2008, apparently. Does that sound right? That sounds like too long ago. Is that right? Has Steam been around that long? I feel like Steam was later than 2008. I feel like it was more like 2012 or something like that. I'll note that none of the early games have any play hours on them. Was play hours something that was added later? I don't know. Somebody will be able to tell me when Steam came out, but I've had Steam pretty much since Steam became a thing, right? And I had a I remember getting something called the Orange Box. Was it called the Orange Box? Half-Life and Portal and that, and basically, I remember being really disgruntled. What's this bloody Steam thing it wants me to play? You know, and I was very, as with all things, it took me a while to, you know, I was like, no, I'm sticking to DVDs, fuck this. And then eventually I figured out, well, yeah, okay, I just kind of gave in and, you know, I was like, okay, right, I'll do everything on Steam. That's one of the reasons I have always stuck with Windows, because of my Steam account. Steam has locked me into Windows. That's why I've never had an Apple system. I've never had a Mac. I've always been Windows through and through. And it's mainly because I want my Steam account to work. You know, my old Steam account. It was Half-Life 2. It was Half-Life 2 that made me have Steam. Orange Box, yeah, exactly, 2008. So I was one of those people forced to get Steam through the Orange Box when I got it. And I'm trying to remember if I even had a physical Orange Box or if it was digital only. I feel like it was an actual game. And it was like you put the DVD in, it made you download Steam. So that means that I had, you know, at least a decade or more playing PC games before Steam was out, right? at least from 1998 to 2008, I was a PC gamer during that time. What games did I play? Well, my most played non-Steam games. Dwarf Fortress came out later, but Dwarf Fortress has only been added to Steam very recently. And when that happened, I was really surprised. So my most played games have been Dwarf Fortress, Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, and I played those back when they originally came out back in 2001, you know, around that time. I had them when they were new games. I remember going and, you know, getting Throne of Ball, you know, around the time it came out. I had less well-defined rules there then. Those rules I share with you are ones I've learned over many years, you know. Total Extreme Wrestling, whatever the latest version of that is, that's an independent game, so it's not on Steam. Europa 1400 The Guild, that's called The Guild Gold now. Much superior to its sequels. The Guild 2 and 3 are shite. The original Guild is a much better game than the sequels. Trust me on that. Capitalism Lab, used to be called Trevor Chan's Capitalism 2, but now it's a much more complex game called Capitalism Lab, although they have not updated the graphics, as you can see. Heroes of Might and Magic 2 and 3 I had. They came, and that was a set where you'd open it up and you had Might and Magic 2 on one side and number 3 on the other side, so they came together. Gangsters Organized Crime, which is an absolute nightmare to run on modern systems, incidentally. You know, I love Gangsters Organized Crime so much that on my previous computer, not the one I'm using now, the one before, I made a partition with Windows XP on it where I could kind of a dual boot the computer to start up in Windows XP purely to play Gangsters Organized Crime, which is one of the more absurd things I've ever done. I did it a few times, but I like Gangsters Organized Crime. King of Dragon Pass is a decent old game. Colonization, by which I mean the old one, you know, they did re-release that. And Covert Action. So those are games I played, you know, older games. And on Steam, so this is since 2008, these are the games with the highest playtime. So Football Manager, RimWorld, Mountain Blade Warband, Crusader Kings 2, Blood Bowl, Dark Souls. Not usually the sort of game I play, but I was kind of forced to play it by various people. Battle Brothers, good game. Darkest Dungeon. Both of them are kind of roguelikes, but they have level-up mechanics in them. Punishing games. Crusader Kings 2, I mean, I know there's 3 out, but I have got every single DLC for Crusader Kings 2. Can you imagine? Every single one. I'm really going to give that up to play, like, vanilla Crusader Kings 3. Fuck off. I'll play Crusader Kings 3 in a decade. It's all right. I'll be 50 by then. But I'm sure Crusader Kings 3 will have a lot of DLC by that point. Football Tactics and Glory. Seems to be an awful lot of hours. I don't remember playing that game for that many hours, but anyway. Spectrum Answer, like I mentioned, Mad Games Tycoon. So you can see that there are a lot of these are strategy games. Some of them are management sims. Some of them are squad management. A lot of turn-based tactics games. Grand Strategy. But all of these games have interesting level-up mechanics, is what I'm saying. Recently, I was playing Total Warhammer 2, 66 hours into that. Prison Architect, Stardew Valley, which is kind of a pretty chilled game. Blood Bowl 2, I've been playing that recently. Skyrim, which I basically just dropped like a stone, even though I played it. I really enjoyed the 50 hours I played of it, but then I just, you know, never touched it again. Civ, I mean, I've always played some version of Civ. And I should explain that almost all of the games I play, lots of these games, are games that I can play while I'm doing something else, 9 times out of 10. I.e., I'm listening to a podcast, I'm maybe reading an audiobook, right? I'm usually engaged in some other activity as well as playing the game. And I've generally been able to multitask those two things. What I struggle with is games where you have to actually like physically have a controller, or like, you know, so I don't really play a lot of first person shooters or games where you need to move the man, right? I much prefer games that are effectively glorified spreadsheets and simulation systems. Spreadsheet Manager is basically the only game I play, even though all of these are kind of very fancy, glorified, you know, glorified graphical engines for spreadsheet simulators. Yeah, Sunhaven. I mean, Sunhaven is very much like Stardew Valley. Yeah, there's Civ 5. Deck Builders are nice, decent little games to play. Monster Train's a deck builder. Slay the Spire's a deck builder. And there's kind of a level up mechanic in those games, kind of. It's more about that's more about building a synergistic deck, though, more than leveling up, I would say. Some managerial games. Graveyard Keeper is a little bit like Stardew Valley as well. Alan Wake, I think, was a game that my ex-wife, those 21 hours were played by my ex-wife, not by me. Overcooked, those 19 hours was with my current wife. Those 20 hours we completed that game together. That's like a cooperation game. It's a lot of fun, actually. One of the few games that you can actually play with a woman, you know. And I remember I bugged the shit out of Mrs. A playing that game, because my whole motto was, you know, I'll chop the shit, you cook the shit. I'll chop the shit, you cook the shit. That was basically the whole strategy. I'll chop the shit, you cook the shit. And then occasionally screaming at her, "Division of labor, stick to your role. Get back to your tenements, woman." Bannerlord, Mountain Blade 2. Now, I those 17 hours I played there, what, like, a lot of that time was when Sargon talked me into playing like a group game. I remember various people like Dankiller and Shadowversary were there, and I kind of, you know, that's the only time I've ever really played Bannerlord. Again, I'm not seeing what Bannerlord's giving you that Warband doesn't give you. Like, why play Bannerlord? Warband's better. Warband's got more stuff. Warband with the, I mean, I play the Floris mod. You know, Warband with Floris is way better than Bannerlord. Don't understand. Littlewood's another kind of Stardew Valley type game. Not as good, really. Defense Grid, that's a good old tower defense game. Strong level up mechanics in those games too. Do you remember Plants vs. Zombies? That's a good level up system. Portal, I mean, everybody played Portal. Factorio. Factorio is a decent game. Yeah, very good, very addictive. Now, lots of these games are games that scare me off. It's like, oh, I can't, if I get too much into these games, I'll play them too much, you know? And Factorio is one of those where it's just like, this could ruin your life if you got to, because that is just like autism plus, 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 right? I think Batman Arkham Asylum was played by my wife, my ex-wife. That wasn't me. That was my ex-wife who played that game. Empire Total War, probably the worst of all the Total War games, if you ask me. Walking Dead, I think that was my ex-wife as well. She played those games. I didn't play those. And my current wife is the one who pumped those 15 hours into Monkey Island. She played Monkey Island, not me. I played Monkey Island so many times, I know it, but like the back of my hands. It was almost like not worth playing, you know. Punch Club is a great grind-a-thon. Talking about leveling up, we're going to talk about grinding. Punch Club is the grinder game. 100% grinder. What else? Siberia. That's a point and click adventure game. I did play that one. I played Siberia. Black Closet. That's like high school bully simulator. Actually, really interesting. Really interesting game. I only played it for 10 hours, but I'll have to pick that up again one day. It's like almost a kind of like a lesbian bully simulator, Black Closet. I do like a kind of minor sideline in detective games, but I always like the idea of detective games more than playing them. The best detective game I ever played was something called J.B. Harold's Murder Club. That's pretty. And there's also a game called Jack the Ripper, 1996 version. That's a decent detective game, but very often detective games turn into just like standard point and click adventures. So there we go. Banish is a city builder, kind of. Banish, I mean, Tropico is a city builder. I played all the Tropico games. I find that they're a bit too easy for me, Tropico. I always just, all the latest iterations of Tropico have all gone the same, where I just, it's too easy. There's no challenge in it for me. I do love the almanac in there. Yeah, and then we're getting, like, I didn't put all of, I think, yeah, there's a couple more of these. Crisis in the Kremlin would be a fun one for Morkar to play, I think. That's like a Soviet Union simulator. Kingdom is a good chilled out game. Loop Hero is fun. Banging music in that game. Yeah. Okay. So you can see, you get a feel for the type of games I play, of which I would say 80 to 90% have very strong level up mechanics, right? And they also have a great deal of complexity in them. Great deal of complexity. So anyway, that's a little walkthrough of my most played games. Right, so I have identified five things that a good level up system needs, okay? And I'm going to talk you through the FTL playtime. I can explain. I actually own FTL, that's Faster Than Light, three times. I've got it on Good Old Games, I've got it on my iPad, and I've got it on here. And I think the hours I pumped into FTL back in the day were on the iPad. I feel like I play that on iPad more than anything else. So there are some games that I just have bought on Steam for convenience, but I've played them elsewhere. I played them before I had Steam, or I play them on a non-Steam system like the iPad. So there we go. I still think FTL is not like it. It's a little bit overrated for me, I think. I mean, it's fun, but it's not quite at the tip top tier for me. I spent a decent amount of time in it. It's quite good would be. So, I mean, yeah, and somebody's asking in the chat, is level mechanics a male thing? most tricks play narrative games or walking simulators. Yes. I would say I generally find narrative and the storyline, especially as I've got older, I find them oppressive. I find them irritating. And I don't like being locked into some shitty story that somebody wants to tell me. I much prefer an organic story that is self-generated. That's why I kind of like some of these roguelite games. Crusader Kings 2 is a kind of basically a storytelling simulator, right? One of the games I remember from back in the day, it was a brilliant game, and it was completely ruined by a tacked-on narrative and cutscenes, and that was Imperium Galactica 2. I'm sure I've mentioned this before. Imperium Galactica 2 is a brilliant game, but they shoehorn in this narrative, and it's completely irritating. It's just like, fuck off with this story. Just let me play the game, and we'll figure out the rest, okay? So a lot of the games I play are sandbox, or they have, you know, open-end. I really reject narrative increasingly. And that's another reason why I seldom play. I don't really play RPGs that much anymore, like proper AAA title RPGs, mainly because I just don't give a shit about the narrative. And even Baldur's Gate, by which I mean the original Baldur's Gate, has huge open-end segments, right? It's like, oh, yeah, you know, Imowyn's being captured, you know, John Irenicus is a baddie, but here's the trouble. You need to raise 20 grand. Now fuck off and do a pile of quests and come back with the money when you've got it. And so Baldur's Gate was very good at, you know, letting you out of the bloody railroad of the story. That was what Baldur's Gate was so good at, was give, I mean, yes, there's a storyline, but you've got the freedom to go and do what you do stuff, and then you can come back to the storyline later on. You know, I think Morrowind was good at that. Morrowind was like, oh, okay, here's some stuff you may want to do, but you've just been let go off this slave ship. Now go off and do stuff. Fuck off. Brilliant. I mean, Morrowind actually was at the extreme end that the first few times I played it, I was like, what do I do? Where do I go? Who do I speak to? But to me, that's good. To me, that was actually daring game making. And I find it really annoying. You know, the things I can't stand in games, fucking railroad storyline, tutorials that never fuck off. You ever play a game? I remember back in the day, do you remember the old theme park sim, right? Theme park sim was, it was just called theme park. And then a couple of years later, they brought out some sequels. And one of them I seem to remember was called Theme Park World. And there was this Scottish, what was he, like a paperclip or something. And I was just like, fuck off. I know how to play theme park, you twat. Go away. Stop popping up. Stop telling me what to, just bugger off. I hate tutorials. I fucking hate them. I much prefer reading a manual, going off to an insanely complex Wikipedia and learning stuff, and then coming back to the game. I really hate it when the game forces you into learning mechanics through tutorial. Just fuck off. Another really, really, really bad game for shoehorn tutorial was Black and White. Did anybody play that in the game back in the day? Black and White, and then later Black and White 2. It was like a... Was it like an angel and a devil, or like a flying angel or something? Just go away. Just stop. Hey, here I am again with some helpful hints. Ooh, did you know? Click this, do that. Just fuck off. I know how to play games. I've been playing games since I was a little kid. Just go away. What, you think I'm stupid? Click on the thing, do the thing. Right click on this, do that. If you don't know what this icon is, maybe click on the little, Maybe they can do like a little in-game encyclopedia or something. Otherwise, bugger off. I hate tutorials. I hate storyline. So anyway, rant over. It's very, 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 very annoying. Hey, listen. Who was that? What was that? That was Zelda, wasn't it? Back on the N64. So what else? What else? What should a good level up system do? What should a good level up system do? Okay. First thing, this is most important. When you level up, it should be an event that actually makes you genuinely excited. And for me, in all of the RPGs I've ever played, Baldur's Gate did this the best. Because it would be this, I can't remember exactly what the jingle sound was, but it was like a little noise that would tell you that you've leveled up. And a little cross would come over in the character portrait. Like, oh my God, how exciting. You get to level up. And in Baldur's Gate, you didn't level up. It wasn't like every 5 minutes that you were leveling. It would take a while, right? It takes a while to level up in that game. So it's an event when it happens. So that's something that you should definitely be excited to level up. And some games are bad at this, right? Some games make leveling up feel routine. Oh, it's like, oh, I've leveled up, I get plus two attack. Oh, I've leveled up, I automatically get plus three defense. You know, it's boring. Or in some, I seem to remember that the Elder Scroll games don't have a level up mechanic, do they? You just kind of generally, it's not like a set thing, you just generally get better over time. Am I getting that right? There's no leveling up in Elder Scrolls. Is that correct? I like it when leveling up is an event, and ideally it should open up a separate screen, right? Or several separate screens. And really, the event should be so big that you may even need to pause it and consult some sort of manual or Wikipedia to really think about what choice you need to make. And the more complicated that process is, the better, in my view. And the more streamlined it is, the worse. Which probably once again goes against all dev wisdom, right? But let me just tell you something about dev wisdom. Devs have increasingly made games worse over time, in my opinion, by streamlining, by making things simpler, by dumbing things down, by making things easier, by holding people's hands, by including tutorials. You know, all of the things that the games want are bad. And all of the things that old school RPGs did was good. That's my view. Which is probably at odds with all of the twats who make YouTube videos about gaming these days, isn't it? Anyway, let's carry on. Number two, the grind. Now, I actually went and watched a number of YouTube videos talking about the level up mechanic, right? From various soy-mouthed, vapid twats who make YouTube videos about gaming. And one of the frequent complaints was about the grind. Oh, you know, shouldn't feel like a grind. Once it feels like you're doing work, the devs have made a mistake. Wrong. The grind should feel like work. The level up needs to be earned. And some part of that earning is a little bit of boredom, a little bit of pain, a little bit of time where it's just like, oh, you know, I need that extra. Where am I going to get the XP from? You need the pain to earn the pleasure. You can't beeline to the delights of the play. The grind should feel like work. Okay? Should feel like work. And again, many modern, vapid, weak gamers don't like the grind. They don't like feeling like there's a grind. Pathetic. Get a different hobby. Third, the choices should strategically matter. Now, this goes without saying, but as I was saying, like, when I say the choices should strategically matter, you need to actually, like, it should be as a bigger choice where you go and consult some guides, you go and look at some Wikipedia, you kind of weigh up the relative costs and benefits of, you know, should I go down this route or should I go down that route with this skill? Like, and one, you know, once as a game, you start to know a little bit better. Ideally, you're looking like four level ups down the line. You know, usually there's like a skill tree or a tech tree or something, and you're thinking, right, well, I'm going to try to make this character into a build like this. So in order to get there, I need to do this, this, and this. Right? So, you know, there's almost like a kind of chess element where you're looking several moves ahead. So, yeah, that should be a good thing, right? That should be a good thing. Number four, it should genuinely enhance your role-playing experience, right? So, yes, I am the sort of gamer who is looking to min-max, right? I am a true kind of gamer's gamer where I want to get the stats chart out, looking to want to, you know, get the maximum amount of benefit from the minimum amount of input and all the rest. You know, I don't even mind making the character a little bit quote-unquote OP in certain terms, okay? Because I want to max out what's possible in the gamer way. But I'm also someone who does like to immerse themselves in the kayfabe of the game, to suspend your disbelief as if you're actually playing as the character. And I mentioned this before. This was something, I mean, a notorious thing is back in 1996, some friends called on me. I was playing the original Championship Manager. And they were like, why are you wearing a suit? I was like, well, I wanted to get into character. So I was playing as the football manager in a suit, right? And to me, the role-playing element is important, that you get lost in your own kind of little headcanon, whatever you're doing, right? And I've generally, over time, found ways of enhancing the role-playing side so you can actually get lost into the world of what's happening. I mean, I'm trying to think of some examples. Like, when I play Crusader Kings 2, I keep a written record, pen and paper, of the court. Do you remember you've got that court? You know, the guy who collects the taxes and the chief spy and, you know, all the members of the court. And I keep a record of who is on that court. And every time there's somebody dies or every time I make a change on the court, I note down the date. So I have a good record over time of all of the people who've been in the court. Because it helps to immerse myself in the world of the game, right? The world of the game. And there are some problems, right, where the min-maxing and the character immersion come into conflict. I'll give you an example. Speaking of Crusader Kings 2 and the power gaming element versus the role-playing element. Be like, okay, you're a medieval Welsh king. A Jew has turned up. He's Jewish. He's a foreigner in the court. There is no good role-playing reason whatsoever to accept this guy in. He's probably going to start a cult. He's probably going to cause trouble. But he's got pretty good stats. And I'm a sucker for the stats. I take the Jew every time. I'm sticking him straight in the court. you know, and I'll try to do things like marry him to a local Welsh girl, or, you know, try to encourage him to, you know, integrate or whatever. But my courts in Crusader Kings 2 are a disgrace. Like, by like 100 years in, it's like, okay, this is a Welsh court, but every single person on it is like some random German guy who's defected, and a Jewish guy, and Hungarian bloke who's been banished, and, you know, my courts in Crusader Kings are an absolute disgrace. They're stuffed with foreigners and heathens. So unfortunately, I'm just a sucker for the stats, and I try to come up with kind of cope justifications, like for why I, like, in role playing and kayfabe, how can I justify the Welsh court being made up of, like, you know, Jacob and you know, Usef and all these characters. So lots of headcanon. And I mean, one of the other things that I do in the when I'm thinking about the composition of the court is I set up like little traditions. Like, I love to have the idea of a tradition. For example, in Crusader Kings, I generally always make the character's wife I generally always make the character's mother, so the queen mother, is generally also the chief tutor, for example, right? And ideally, I have managed things such that, I can't remember what the stat is now, but I manage things as such that her stats kind of are good for that role, if that makes any sense. Or, I don't know, let's say I had a Jewish chancellor. You know, I always have a Jewish chancellor, for example. So I try to then make a pattern fit so I can justify it by tradition or something like that. So, many such cases. yes. So, yeah, the role-playing element should be enhanced. And generally, the game should give you enough options to make specialists, to make people who have actual, like, specialist roles on the team or the squad or the party or whatever it is, okay? One of the reasons I don't play RPGs so much these days is because of the horrible fourth edition thing that came in with D&D, where everybody's kind of a generalist. Everybody can, like, yeah, you can wear an armor. Yeah, if you want to, you can swing a sword, and you can wear armor, and you can sling a few spells. And no, fuck all that. If you're a mage, you should be weak as a kitten and, you know, scared of swords. If you're a bloody tank, you shouldn't be able to do spells. You understand what I'm saying? I hate the world of, yeah, you're free to do anything you want. You can just do what you want. It's all about freedom. It's all about, I'm a fairy fighter mage cleric priest. I can do it. I've got the biggest spell book in the world, and I'm a tank. Fuck that. There needs to be specialization. Specialization under the division of labor, which is the birth of civilization and the birth of good role-playing. It's the birth of good role-playing. What's the point of role-playing if everybody can do a bit of everything? It's bullshit. It's rubbish. That's not a role. That's everybody being the same, a kind of sludge of, you know, bit of everything. No. No. This guy's good at ranged. This guy's good at melee. You know, it's not that difficult. This guy is a tank. This guy's a priest. Whatever it is. Fifth. Finally, as the game progresses, that should make you feel genuinely powerful when at a high level and an absolute wimpling at a low level, right? And again, Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 do this exceptionally well, okay? When you're a level 1 minion in Baldur's Gate, you're pathetic. You are pathetic. You can, a gibbling can take you down in one hit. especially if you start off as a mage, you know, a mage with 4 hit points. By the time you're like level 25, 30, you're just a fucking beast in that game. And it's just like, you know, taking out entire rooms with like 2 spells and stuff like that. Right. Or, you know, and that game is an expert at taking you through that level process and being like, and it gives you moments. It's like, okay, you're level 12. Do you take on the dragon now? Or save it until you're a bit more powerful. Okay, let's come. Maybe we'll come back here later because that dragon is just going to destroy your entire party immediately. And this is another thing. This is another thing. Another reason why I've gone off RPGs. Because the RPG should be the kind of champion genre for the level up. But in my experience, a lot of... I don't know if this was Elder Scrolls' fault or Oblivion. I can't remember exactly when this came in. A lot of RPGs have that stupid thing where the enemies level up with you. You're always kind of parity with the enemies. I mean, what's that about? No, it should be that you grow powerful. So that something that was once a challenge is now like a flick of your hand or something like that. And there's a brilliant moment that there's a brilliant moment in Baldur's Gate late on. I think it's in Throne of Ball. You know, once you've gone through to that bit, where you're a really powerful party that by that point, you know, and depending on which path you take, you may have like, you know, Saravok, who's the end boss of Baldur's Gate 1. Saravok could be actually in your party. And he can one shot like half, like he's got this special sword that can one shot loads of enemies, right? So he's just like, he's an absolute beast of destruction. And anyway, there's a moment in that game where you have you're going about some cavern and you come across a low level party and you give them a little quest. It's just a lovely little moment in that game where it's like, oh, because if you've played it all the way from Baldur's Gate 1, it was like, oh, that's your previous self. You're meeting you back when you were level 2, but now you're like level 30. And there's an amazing sense of progress and journey. I don't know how many games actually achieve that, making you feel a genuinely powerful thing. Anybody got any... I mean, the final boss of Throne of Ball is mental. And so is... If you really get into it, you can play it with a mod called Tactics that makes the game really fucking hard. Really hard. Anyway, that's for something for a different conversation. What other games have got... What other games have got making you feel genuinely powerful and making you feel really weak when you're at low level? For me, the original Baldur's Gate games do it the best, but I'm trying to think of other examples of that. One of the games that has a pretty good and robust level system is Blood Bowl, which is why I've got so many hours into it. Now, Blood Bowl has got randomness... a little bit. It's got the heavy dice element, which can be frustrating. But of course, if you know anything about those sorts of games, it's all about mitigate the dice, lowering the risk, managing the risk. And that is something that, you know, if you come from like a board game background, if you're used to playing board games, you know about that already. And many of the best level up systems come from pen and paper RPGs, or they come from board games like Blood Bowl, which have got robust rule sets, dice, you know, stat charts. These tend to be the best level up systems in my experience. The worst ones tend to be major franchises based on some intellectual property, in my experience. Right. And almost like the bigger the franchise, the bigger the name of the franchise, the worse the internal systems. I also don't like level up systems that feel cosmetic or tacked on, or that don't really impact how things are going to go. Basically you end up playing the same game no matter which way you take it. I didn't like the way some of the Star Wars games implemented it. I didn't think any of those choices particularly mattered that well. These are just some of my preferences and opinions. Okay, hopefully it has been entertaining for those of you who know what I'm talking about. And yes, as ever, I am grumpy and stuck in the mud. That's just what I'm like. He's a bit of a curmudgeon, that academic ages, isn't he? Yes. If you don't like that, maybe you shouldn't be here. The other thing I'll say very quickly is that another thing that, and it's not really quite leveling up, but it's something that always comes into play when I play games like Crusader Kings or Mount & Blade or some of the... In fact, Mount & Blade is a game with good grind. Remember when you've got really, like, you recruit the peasant, you train them up a little bit. The level system in Mount & Blade is really good. I like the grind of it. And it just gets that a bit right where... and that's a game. Mount & Blade is a game that does that low-level wimpling versus powerful lord thing. You know, when you get powerful in Mount & Blade, you're a fucking beast. But it takes ages to get there, and there's a sense of achievement. And you can't, like, short-circuit it. It takes you, like... If you want to be powerful in Mount & Blade, it takes you a while, right? And it's just like, you know, and maybe you'll have to take a few losses, and maybe you'll have to lick a few wounds. But... by the time you're high level in that game, you're just like beast mode. So that's something. What was I going to say? Oh, yes, complexity, right. One of the things that I like, and I'm trying to think of good games that have this. Crusader Kings has it. Dwarf Fortress has it. Which is where complexity reaches a level where I'm now trying to think of ways of reducing the overall things that I have to micromanage, okay, as an active strategy choice, i.e. reducing the level of my focus. Now, this is a genuine management problem. Actually, it pertains to real-life politics as well. One of the problems in our world is that systems are too complex for anybody to manage now. And there's a moment, and if you play these games, you'll know it when you get there, where the fortress in Dwarf Fortress is too big, where your empire in Crusader Kings is too vast. And like, how do you come up with ways of coping with that and keeping the purview small? Okay. One of the things that I have often done in Crusader Kings, right? In Crusader Kings, is I tend to keep the direct province that I control, my character controls, small. And then I divvy up the kingdom between various powerful dukes. Ideally, all of them are sons, right? So you've got, like, I don't know. And so I have, if you can imagine, an org chart. If you can imagine the dukes and the earls and so on are an org chart, okay? And it's about managing it so that none of them are too powerful that they start a civil war, right? So there's a kind of, in Crusader Kings, there's a trade-off between kind of devolving power to underlings, right, without making them so powerful that they try to overthrow you, which is actually a very good simulation of what an actual feudal king would have faced back in the day. And that is something that I... an AI companion. Take tasks off my hands, exactly. So you don't want to have to directly manage all the provinces yourself. You want to keep your own purview reasonably small, but how do you do it in such a way that doesn't make any one person too powerful, right? And I found various different ways of kind of like one of the things I'm trying to remember if you can do this or not, but one of the things I used to think about was you've got like a duke of an area, but you have one of his there's the province, the county or whatever, and he's got like two cities under him, and they'll report in. But I'm pretty sure there's a way of arranging it so that one of the underlings reports directly into you, the king. So you're kind of like, you're picking up minor baronial barons as direct vassals. So I kind of play little games like that, so that there's a limit to the extent to which these, you know, dukes get too powerful. Hope you enjoyed that. Does anybody have any questions, or shall we get out of here? Any questions for anyone? Let's have a look. There's a couple of super chats. Thomas Glindauer says, if you could only max out one of your foundation stats, economics, writing, logic, or rhetoric, which would it be? Well, Thomas, I would say writing is the one that will be of most use to you in life. If you want to start with any of my courses, start with writing. In terms of my own max out, I mean, that's probably my highest stat as well. If I had my own level up stats, I would have highest in writing, I would say, out of the ones I teach, naturally, because I'm a writer. So in terms of politics, rhetoric is probably more important than writing. But in terms of everyday life, I think writing is the top. Any other super chats here? Don't think so. But I can take a couple of questions from the actual chat. Just normal. Let's have a look. It's going too fast a minute. Is it going to slow down? Why does it do this? For some reason, it's replaying the entire chat. Do you hate fast travel as much as I do? Well, funny enough, I did have an old-fashioned rant about fast travel back in the day. And when first travel first became a thing, I did rail against it. However, in some games, it's pretty necessary. So, Morrowind, you're looking at a 1 hour real life walk across the map versus taking one of those striders. Get on the bloody strider, I would say. It was also necessary in Baldur's Gate. You don't want to walk across the map. You need the oh right, okay, it's taking you 8 hours to walk this far. I would say that the important thing about fast travel is that it needs to be implemented in a way that makes sense and in a way where it genuinely feels like it's unnecessary for you to have to walk across all of the different maps, I would say. There was a later iteration of fast travel that was kind of immersion killing. Right, it was too automated, it was too much. So there needs to be a balance between like grinding across the map and saving you time. I was terrible in Morrowind, because there's only striders in so many places, right? So there's still quite a lot of walking back and forth. A lot of my Morrowind games went the same way, where I just basically become distracted picking mushrooms and flowers. Just getting like obsessed with herbalism and arranging ingredients on my shelf and kind of that's what I got in Skyrim. I got massively distracted by becoming an enchanter and like making magic weapons. And what was that little mini game that you could play? Like in those games, I really get obsessive about the little side thing So yeah. How did Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 have minorities but didn't feel woke? Well, because they were coming out of Fresh Prince era. And it's, I mean, it's a fantasy world. Right? So, I mean, what minority? I mean, who's a minority, quote unquote, in that game? You know, Vicky, the cleric, the evil cleric. You know, she is oppressed, quote unquote, because she's literally a fucking drow and she's evil. And correctly being burned as a witch when you find her. Correctly. You know, so they did it in a way that was believable. And they did it in a way that wasn't preachy. But who else is a minority in that game apart from Viconica? I can't remember now. I mean, Yoshimo was just a dude from a different realm, wasn't he? I'm trying to remember. I mean, that's the thing with fantasy realms. There's an inbuilt lore, and it's like, well, in the fantasy realms, you're going to get people coming in from different places. You know, like Edwin, he was a red wizard, and he was from a different area, so he had an accent, and it made sense. But he was also seen naturally treated with suspicion because he was not local to the place. So they did it in a way that was believable. I mean, I don't know if the new Baldur's Gate does that or not. But, it, you know, so they just did it in a way that wasn't like a plot point. It was just believable. It was just like an accurate rendition of what it would be like. I remember there was the kind of Cern, the druid. He was a bit kind of Native American-y, wasn't he? But yeah, he's exactly like you'd imagine a druid to be, you know? So, how to not optimize the fun out of games. I mean, I think there needs to be menu screens. One of my least favorite things in the way that games have developed is the little menu wheel, where you don't actually physically leave the play screen to go to the menus and the stats. It just comes up in a little menu wheel, right? And they even gaslight you and tell you this is quality of life, quote unquote, right? It's the consolization of PC gaming is what it is. And it's shit. You should have a separate stat. In fact, you need to pause the game and open a Wikipedia to really make sense of the stat in ideal circumstances. I think that one of the worst things is the menu wheel. You know, I like there needs to be an option to put the data on the screen and not hide the data. The dice rolls, the calculations, that information needs to be recorded somewhere, ideally, in a good game. And a lot of modern games hide that information from you, or they don't tell you how it's calculated. So there we go. Comments on Elder Scrolls Oblivion's awful leveling up system. Yeah, well, I mentioned it earlier on. There needs to be a sense where you're getting more powerful versus low enemies. And, you know, there needs to be a sense of progression. And I think what Oblivion did, if I'm remembering things correctly, is that all the enemies would level up with you. So everything was parity all the time. I mean, that's not fun. That's stupid. That was a terrible decision. Quality of life, UX, and so on are cancerous euphemisms for utter decline that is modern game design. Yeah, I agree. I agree. I absolutely agree. I agree. I hate most things that are talked of as innovations are actually just decline, in my opinion, in this field. The two biggest ones I would say are the menu wheel as opposed to the separate screen with stats. Terrible. Terrible, quote-unquote, innovation. And the other big one was the green arrow. The green arrow to tell you which way you need to go. Huh? So the whole game is following this green arrow. Yeah. Brilliant. I tell you what, BioShock was guilty of a lot of this. BioShock had a lot of these modern elements when back when it came out, which were bad. Had the you know, the fast travel, the green, the bloody eponymous green arrow, you know, the menu wheel. You know, strong narrative. And the other bad thing that BioShock, right, the other bad thing that BioShock had was that you couldn't fucking die. You can't die in BioShock. Oh, I've died. Oh, I've respawned in this exact same bit. Oh, I've died. I've respawned again. You need to be able to die. And it needs to be an absolute catastrophe when you die. And you need to get into the discipline of having several save markers and quick save and the art of the quick save. Quick saves, quick reloads, and save markers are the true mark of a proper game. Not like this bullshit where you can just endlessly die and respawn. What? No. You need to actually get yourself in situations where you're in genuine trouble of getting like stuck. And again, I'll go back to Baldur's Gate as the classic example. This party that you've nurtured all the way through, you've mistimed your save. You've mistimed your save. And now you're stuck in a situation where you have to, I don't know, defeat the Twisted Room. So your choice is get good and defeat the Twisted Rune, or you're not going to complete the game because you fucked up your save. Right? You saved over the last save point before you went into the Twisted Rune. So how are you going to do it? That is a situation that should be able to arise in your RPG. And modern game design is all about holding somebody's hand as if they're a bloody girl who's afraid to fail. Because really, what the game is about is finding out about the next bit of the story. Go and read a novel. Go and read a novel. And leave the gaming to gamers. All right. That'll do, I think. That'll do, friends. That's enough. I am back later on Apostolic Majesty's channel, where I will be talking about the British Empire. But yeah, do buy Foundations of Writing, like I said. Probably the, you know, if you haven't taken any of my courses, that's the one to start with. But most importantly of all, ladies and gentlemen, get out.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.